You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, must do, need do, should do, better do, can do, and will do. And I hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it is not, you will get it done anyway, because you don't procrastinate. You don't put nothing off. You get stuff done, especially here in 2019, as their calendar says it is, because that's 400 years of us being here. We need to get stuff done for us. We need to get things done. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look for the red, black, and green lion with African posed, and click on that and take it from there. Find the previous recorded programs that are dated and titled. Thanks to my good brother, Brother Kwaku. Other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, after my program, not right after, but Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. All times are going to give are Eastern Times. Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. Great show last night. He asked me to be a part of the program as a panel, and it got live. Believe me, it got live. Tonight, Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. On Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 to 12. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., no, that's not me. It's Sister POC with her program, Revive, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening, once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. It is the largest online marketplace for American African owned businesses. And if you're in the Atlanta area and you're near the Greenbrier Mall, check them out. They have a kiosk there. They have laundry detergent, soaps, toothpaste. All these products are produced by us. Batteries. I could go on. But check out the website at WeBuyBlack.com and be a member. Purchase from ourselves. Okay, that's what we need to do. Africa for the Africans. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brother Bomani Tahembe is preparing to take another group of our brothers and sisters back home to Ghana in May of this year, May 19th. Excuse me, May of 2019. And he is asking brothers and sisters to go to the website, begin to save your money, be a part of their historic trip. If you want to look at pictures from the previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani, B-O-M-A-N-I. If you want to see videos of previous tours, particularly the latest two tours, the one from last year, May, and last year, November, Go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Books. We need to read. We need books. We need to expand our mind. We need to raise our consciousness. One of the best places to do it here in Atlanta is the Shrine of the Black Madonna, located in the West End, 946 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard here in the West End. The number to call is 404-549-8678. 404-549-8678. They have clothes. They have furniture. They have the red, black, and green shoes. If you see me in those shoes, they have them there. If they don't have your size, they'll get them. Artwork, art, and so forth. But they also have a class every Saturday, open to the free and open to the public, 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And that is Brother Olatunji doing that class. But he also put together, that's Black History class, Know Thyself, but he also put together a serious multimedia library with 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment, over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. It is jam-packed. You need to check that out, particularly for your children. That's right. For your children, your family. The Medu Netra bookstore is in the Greenbrier Mall as well, right across from, very near, We Buy Black. That's in the, right near there. So once you see that, and you can see the Medu bookstore, the Medu Netra bookstore. And if they don't have the books that you are looking for, they will get them for you. Also, Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, my good friend and brother Ajamu out there in Lithonia. And they have the red, black, and green shoes, and they have books. And if they don't have what you are looking for, they will get it for you. Us Lifting Us, Economic Development Cooperative for our people, in the spirit of Ujamaa, as we like to say, family-centered economics. Tomorrow night, Thursdays, their broadcast on Blog Talk at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789 at 9 p.m. Us Lifting Us. We pulled our monies together and we created a cafe, Cafe Ulu, located in the Sylvan Plaza, 2036 Sylvan Road, open Monday, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., Tuesday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we sell coffee. We have African coffee. You know, some places just have coffee and they have whatever brewed, you know, but we specialize. We have a different coffee flavor every day. Cameroon, Tanzanian, Kenyan, Ethiopian, Nicaraguan, Brazilian, you name it, we have coffee. So check us out. Check us out online at Cafe Ulu, CFEULU.com. Also, to go to the website of Us Lifting Us. Another product we sell at Cafe Ulu, produced by my good brother Novak Young, is Ambrosia. Ambrosia is a delicious vitality drink. And check that out. Baba Rudy will have a class, a PowerPoint presentation this Saturday, January 19th from 5 p.m. to 9 at Wadada Health Market and Juice Bar, located also in the West End, 878 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard, right across the street from the West End Mall. On Ralph David Abernathy, can't miss it. That is this Saturday from 5 to 9. The Elements of Warriorhood. The Elements of Warriorhood. Also, to Sister Yabarudi, Sisters Only with Yabarudi, Mama Yabarudi, discussing navigating the challenges of African womanhood, featuring yoga with Mama Yami and a sister circle. That is Saturday, February 2nd from 5 to 9, once again at Wadada Healthy Market and Juice Bar. And then in March 2nd, Ackerman Institute and Ackerman House's 20th anniversary celebration. Brothers and sisters, we need to support this and what he is doing. The fact that he produces all these books on his own, all the things that he does, we need to support Ackerman House. In fact, not just support that house, we need to produce other houses just like that. They need to be one in every city, wherever our people are. Inye Sesim. I read some of the previous days of the Inye Sesim, and always looking at the day before, the day after, or the weekend And so if I see something I think that is truly relevant to bring to your attention, I would always do so. In fact, I like yesterday's, and yesterday, of course, was Dr. King's birthday. I'm going to talk about him in a minute. But you know, the day is Wednesday, and then I have my good brother, Brother Franklin Jones, with me. I will get with him in a minute. But I'm going to give this. January 15th, the enemy can never be driven out by words alone, no matter how sound the argument. Westerners and or people who think like them seek to gather information, but not in a random or open fashion as they would have us believe. Instead, they methodically sift through these statements for those ideas that support their beliefs. For example, they do not attend forums, debates, or lectures about political, cultural issues to have their minds changed unless they were dissatisfied with their position beforehand. A broadened or contrary perspective is sought only when they have no other choice because they have become overpowered and have a need to pretend an inclusive multiculturalism, or because they realize that what they believe has completely failed them. But even then, they acquiesce only with the expectation that this new truth will eventually be brought in line with their unchanged agenda and be credited to them as their original thinking. Debate is never for the sake of debate, except to distract their enemies. That attend public discussions in order to have what they already believe validated by experts. They attend to receive information that fits what they already know. Affirm. I engage in thought and action which produces concrete results. Affirm. I engage in thought and action which produces concrete results. January 16th. It is a woman that gives birth to a man. The Akan proverb. The kind of person a woman is, her character, her desires, aspirations, and dreams, her interpretations of reality, are all reflected in the man she chooses as her complement. When a woman chooses a man and consistently works with him to remove all doubt as to his power, she is giving birth to a vision of her whole power. Without women, there is no men. Biologically, emotionally, intellectually, or spiritually. It is in women that men see their reflection and are able to determine if they measure up to what they desire to be. Just as African women are defined and measured by their grandfathers, fathers, and brothers, African men are defined and measured by their grandmothers, mothers, wives, and sisters. This is not a complaint, as some of the more insecure among us would argue. It is a compliment and a divine one at that. When a woman is doing her work, the man she has selected as her complement, who operates within the tradition of our ancestors, naturally develops in relationship to her defensive, survival, and emotional needs. If he is truly her man, he evolves in accordance with how she exercises her power, and he sees no threat to his manhood in creating a fence around her garden as strong and secure as she needs it to be. In fact, if he is indeed a man, he takes great pride in serving the woman who reflects his highest ideas. Affirm, women are our center. Affirm, women are our center. That's from the Revolutionary Daily Thoughts, Inye Sesem. Revolutionary Daily Thoughts. And boy, do we need them. You're listening to African Perspectives here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And on Wednesdays, we have always had a brother who has now become a part of what we do here at African Perspective and helping to raise our consciousness. And that good man is Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix. Good morning, Brother Franklin Jones.
Good morning, my brother. How you doing today?
I'm fine, brother. How are you?
Always a delightful when I'm on your show, on your program.
All right. Well, hey, it's a pleasure to have you on, and I look forward to you being on, and I look forward to our conversation. I look forward to the input of our listeners. because we have some very good and astute listeners, and they're always willing to lend a hand, give information, maybe a correction, or maybe just whatever, you know. But I always look forward to it, and because that's what we're trying to do here. That's what we're doing here. We're helping to raise the consciousness of our people. Not trying. We're doing it because it needs to be done. Our people need to think clear. Our people need to think in a direction that will help us with independence, self-determination, liberation, and ultimately sovereignty for us as a people. Because to me, there is no other direction. That's like last night on Dr. Rogers' program. I just said, hey, point blank, you know, I don't care about the politics of this country. The only thing I care about is independence and sovereignty for African people. And so to me, I know that the partisan politics of this country is not going to do that for us. No matter how many people run for president that are American African, male or female, you know, it ain't happening and it's not going to happen. It only happens when we make it happen. You know, we put the energy to making it happen. It don't happen by osmosis. It don't happen because we want it to happen. Hope it happens. Pray for it to happen. Wish it happens. No, it happens because we make it happen. Energy. You know, we can meditate and pray, and that's good. You know, but it's ultimately putting energy. In fact, there was a piece by Frederick Douglass that he prayed, and I'm paraphrasing, of course. He said he prayed for freedom and prayed for freedom and meditated on it, but it was only when he started putting things in physical motion did he actually realize that freedom, you know?
Totally agree.
Mm-hmm. Well, yesterday, of course, was King's birthday. And I know we're going to talk today about the infamous Willie Lynch letter. And but I want to start out by a piece I've seen here. Somebody sent online with the Washington Post. The story of how Michael King Jr. became Martin Luther King Jr. And quickly read this. It's not there, not very long, but it's very pointed. And I want you to comment on this, Brother Frank. Okay.
Okay.
It's not very long. Martin Luther King Jr. was born 90 years ago yesterday. 90 years ago yesterday. January 15th, 1929. By the name of his, but the name of his original birth certificate filed April 12th, 1934, 5 years after King was born, was not Martin, nor was it Luther. In fact, for the first years of his life, he was Michael King, and it wasn't until he was 28 that on July 23rd, 1957, his birth certificate was revised. The name Michael was crossed out, next to which someone printed carefully in black ink, Martin Luther Jr. The story of how Michael became Martin began in 1934 when King's father, who was then known as Reverend Michael King or M.L. King, was senior pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church and a prominent minister in Atlanta. In the summer of 1934, King's church sent him on a whirlwind trip. He traveled to Rome, Tunisia, Egypt, Jerusalem, and Bethlehem before setting sail to Berlin, where he would attend a Baptist World Alliance meeting, according to the Martin Luther King Jr. Research and Education Institute at Stanford University. The trip to Germany, historians said, had a profound effect on the elder King. King arrived in Berlin a year after Hitler became chancellor. During his trip, the senior King toured the country where, in 1517, the German monk and theologian Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the door of the Wittenberg Castle Church, challenging the Catholic Church. The act would lead to the Protestant Reformation, the revolution that would split Western Christianity. All around him in Berlin, King Sr. was seeing the rise of Nazi Germany. The Baptist Alliance responded to that hatred with a resolution deploring all racial animosity and every form of oppression or unfair discrimination toward the Jews, toward people of color, or toward subject races in any part of the world. When King's center when King Sr. returned home to Atlanta in 1934. He was a different man. He said, Claiborne Carson, director of the King Institute, it was sometimes in this year that he changed his name and changed his son's name too. It was a big deal for him to go there, to the birthplace of Protestantism, said Carson, who edited the autobiography of Martin Luther King Jr., which was compiled and written after King's assassination. That probably implanted the idea of changing his name to Martin Luther. The act was almost biblical. Jacob became Israel. Saul of Tarsus became Paul. Simon became Peter. Taylor Branch wrote in Parting the Waters, America in the King Years, 1954 to 1963, for Michael King, who had come to Atlanta smelling like a mule to switch to Martin Luther King, caught the feeling of his leap to the stars. The elder King was born Michael King on December 19th, 1897 in Stockbridge, Georgia, where his father worked on a plantation as a sharecropper, according to the King Institute. Mike King left the plantation after accusing the owner of cheating his father out of money. In Atlanta, Mike King remade himself. You can see him becoming more and more prestigious. You can see him becoming more and more prestigious. Carson, who was charged by King Estate to edit his papers, told the Washington Post in an interview, when he marries Alberta, he is a modestly educated preacher without a significant church and probably a third grade education until he goes to Morehouse College. King Sr. graduated from Morehouse College in 1930, and when his father-in-law died, he became pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church. From that point on, he is pretty much consistently called M.L. King, or M.L., Carson said. Many American Africans in the South use initials they didn't want to be called by their first names. If they had initials, it was not an option for Caucasians to call American African people by their names. Scholars say there is no definitive account of why Senior King changed his name. Daddy King himself said he changed his name because he had an uncle named Martin and he had an uncle named Luther, and he was following his father's wishes to change the name. But it seems like he was affected by the trip to Berlin because that would have brought him in the land of Martin Luther. I think the obvious reason is Martin Luther sounded more distinguished than Mike King. But the younger King initially shirked from it, commenting publicly only once after the Montgomery bus boycott that perhaps he earned his name, Branch said. Reverend King supplied the wish and the preparation, but it would remain for strangers in the world at large to impose MLK, Martin Luther King's name, upon him. The transformation from Michael to Martin is illustrated in MLK's writings and letters. In October of 1948 letter to his mother, the younger King wrote home from Crozier Theological Crozier Theological Seminary. I often tell the boys around the campus I have the best mother in the world, and you will never know how I appreciate the many kind things you and Daddy are doing for me. So far, I have gotten the money, $5 a week. He signed the letter, Your Son, M.L. By 1950, the young King had become Martin in his letters, according to King Institute. In July 18, 1952, letter to Coretta, who would become his wife, King writes, Darling, I miss you so much. The letter is poetic. My life without you is a year without a springtime, which comes to give illumination and heat to the atmosphere saturated by the dark, cold breeze of winter. He goes on to talk about his opposition to capitalism and trade monopolies and the necessity of gradual social change. King signs the letter, Eternally Yours, Martin. It would be his final sermon in April 3rd, 1968 in Memphis, where King had returned to help the sanitation workers strike. King revealed why his father had changed his name to Martin. The sermon in which King spoke expeditiously told the mass meeting at Bishop Mason's Temple in a long remembrance as poetic, as prophetic. King begins the sermon in a steady cadence. If I were standing at the beginning of time, with the possibility of taking a kind of general panoramic view of the whole of humanity and the whole of history up till now, and the Almighty said to me, Martin Luther King, what age would you live like to live in? I would take my mental flight to Egypt. I would watch God's children in their magnificent trek from the dark dungeons of Egypt through, or rather across the Red Sea, through the wilderness on toward a promised land. And in the spirit of this magnificence, I wouldn't stop there. You know, I always have a problem. I have a problem with Christianity and their challenge against Kemet. We'll talk about that later. King described traveling to Greece and to Mount Olympus. And I would see Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, Euripides, and all them other folks assemble around the Parthenon. And I would watch them around the Parthenon as they discussed the great and eternal issues of reality. But I wouldn't stop there. I would spoke of traveling through the heyday of the Roman Empire and then traveling on to the day of the Renaissance. I would even go by the way that man for whom I am named had his habitat. And I would watch Martin Luther as he tacks his 95 theses on the door of the Church of Wittenberg. King concluded in his sermon, "Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will." And he allowed me to go to the mountaintop, and I looked over and I seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. The next evening, as King prepared to go to dinner at a home of a local minister, a shot rang out, killing him on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel, and the world mourned Dr. Martin Luther King. What do you think about that, Brother Frank?
I think it's a very, very interesting story. Thanks for sharing it. It enlightened me about the name Michael. I had questions about it myself. But the more you disclose the story, I kind of think it was logical for this father to suggest the changing of his son's name. After all, his son was a junior under Michael. To keep his son a junior, his son had to change his name also.
So it
makes sense.
Right.
Because he would be if the senior changed his name to Martin Luther and not change his son, he was stripping his son of that junior that he passed down to him. So it totally makes sense.
But also,
as you describe the story, you sort of hear an adoration that the kings had towards Western history,
right,
as through a connection to Christianity.
Right.
They seem to be, you know, tied to Western philosophy, Western history, not Afrocentric at all, which I believe was sort of a downfall.
Yeah. Well, because see, the reality is the information about us has been there. It was there even before Daddy King. So that's, you know, I mean, A.J. Rogers, many historians who, just like Drusilla Dungy Houston in 1926, she said, "I have dug up an irrefutable arsenal of facts." Because she wrote the book, The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Ancient Kushite Empire. She says, "I have dug up an irrefutable arsenal of facts that Harvard or Yale or even cowardly scholarship in our race dare not refute." And then probably the most profound part of that quote is, how can a leadership point the way forward that is utterly ignorant of the past? And because we had this theological leadership that is Christian in its leanings, then that's why you're going to have somebody talking about Egypt as being somehow something bad, something evil. And of course that the Jews were in bondage there. And of course he wants to see the big sea of humanity of them leaving out of Egypt. Of course we know now that that story is not true. The Exodus did not happen. There is no historical proof of the Exodus happening. But if you ask me, we need an Exodus. We need an Exodus now more than ever has African people.
Agreed.
You know, because just as he talked about the other Caucasians or other European societies, Greece and Rome and so forth, you know, because that was his learning, you know, and I know that he evolved as a man, and I always like to point out him saying to Harry Belafonte towards the end, you know, I believe that I'm trying to integrate my people into a burning building. You know, that ultimately that this society and how it operates is no good for us as a people. And I'm believing he was understanding that the capitalism, the war machine, all of those things could not be changed internally. We have to separate ourselves from it. There's nothing that we could do or say. No amount of praying, hoping, wishing, believing that Caucasians were somehow have an epiphany and change their attitude and mindset and become more humane towards other peoples on the planet. We didn't see. I think, brother Frank, we don't understand what we're dealing with, you know, and that's why your work has been so important.
Thank you very much. Yes, we cannot liberate ourselves playing into the white man's ideology. His ideology filled his propaganda are designed to make us think in ways that serve and protect his interests. So no, we cannot free ourselves holding on to his ideologies, his teachings. His teachings are all lies. So often we wonder how dare whites steal our history, to distort everything. But they do so because society functions based upon those false narratives. And those narratives exalt whites above all other races. That's why they perpetuate and create these lies, perpetuating their superiority, because they benefit from a society that functions based upon the lies that perpetuates white superiority. That's why they perpetrate the lies, because people function based upon the stories they believe about them. So whites continue to spread propaganda that exalts them and marginalizes and denigrates black people. We have to understand. But they, their position, they're doing it for their preservation. They do it. They tell lies that preserve their Western culture, preserve them.
You know
that supports their lies, their ideology.
You know,
we
just
have to recognize that when the enemy is controlling the information will always benefit the enemy. And our enemies control information is one of their greatest power. They control information, and their power over information allows them to manipulate us to think in ways that serve and protect their interests. That's the reality of the world we live in.
And see,
our curriculum, our school curriculums and our media are controlled by social engineering scientists, propaganda experts, and mass manipulating experts. That's how you control large populations. We are being controlled by white ideology. That's why black people are bleaching their skin, perming their hair, calling each other niggers, despite, and adoring whites in spite of a brutal history to the contrary. We are programmed by white men we've never heard of. That's our hidden reality.
And see, that being the reality that it is, that's why Richard King from Iowa, Congressman from Iowa, who has said inflammatory things in the past, why everybody's jumped on him. He's saying, what's wrong with saying white supremacists, white nationalists, Western society, Western civilization? What's wrong with that? And of course, they jumped on him because the history of that and how it has been used. But the reality is, as I stated many times, and I will, that saying white supremacist, see, by the media saying white supremacist, and they give you this image of those khaki wearing tiki torch carrying fools back a couple years ago in Charlottesville, or some other reactionaries or other people. The reality is white supremacy, European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, it is who they are. It is what they do. So the president is, the Congress is, the Senate is, the judiciary is, it is that way. The governors are, it is that way on a state and local level.
Yes. You know, Ann Coulter spoke last night, and she spoke in an endorsing manner of what King said, the congressman, and also endorsing the wall. And she said there's nothing, she's white, she's a white right-wing conspirator, okay? And she said that there's nothing wrong with we working to preserve our culture and to protect our self-esteem. That's exactly what she said. So she said they should use their position of power to protect their culture and protect their self-esteem. And when she said that on the media last night, that is the ideals of whites. they perpetuate lies that perpetuate and lift their self-esteem, and they create and implement laws to preserve their white dominance. And she said that's the need for the wall. Honestly, you know, she was candidly said it.
And no, and see, that's the thing, is that this society, with its mass contradictions and hypocriticalness, I coined that word, brother, hypocriticalness, is mm-hmm. always sent out contrary messages of stating we believe that all men are created equal and endowed by the Creator with inalienable rights of life, liberty. They don't believe that. They believe that for Caucasians, but they don't believe that for humanity.
Proof of what you just said is the fact that when that was written, they had slaves.
Right.
You know, right. George Washington had slaves. They all had slaves. So,
right.
You know, there were slaves who built the Capitol, right? You know, in the North. People don't realize that, you know.
But
so
see,
it never included us.
Right. No, it was never to include anybody. But in fact, really, it was never to include anybody but Caucasian men.
Yes.
It wasn't even about Caucasian people with women and children. No, it was Caucasian men. See? And yeah. So what we fail to understand is how Caucasians evolved. How they evolved from as a human species and why they are the way they are. We fail to realize that. That's why we have no understanding about the lack of compassion, the lack of empathy and sympathy for other people, you know? Why Bobby Wright? I love Bobby Wright and his brilliant essay, Psychopathic Racial Personality, you know, where he talks about that these people are psychopaths and they have no remorse. They'll do it and not even a second thought. They won't even blink. They'll do it. And our problem is that we have always been, as the first of humanity, a people of compassion and understanding and welcoming. Because when they came into Africa, all of them, we treated them with dignity and respect unless they've proven otherwise and we beat them back. You know, that has been the history. And that has been the history of other people, because when the European came to other places, you know, I just read an article. I'm going to read that on the program, brother. I might read it with you because I think we need to discuss this, because what it is saying is that Europeans have changed the planet because of what they did, because of colonization, because of imperialism. And we need to discuss that, because they have, you know. But see, our problem is we don't understand what we're dealing with. We think that we can appeal to these people from a moral standpoint, that we can reason with them, where we can logically talk about issues and so forth, and they can see that and they can change their behavior and treat us with some dignity and respect. That ain't gonna happen. It hasn't happened. It's not happening now. And damn it, it ain't gonna happen. But we keep holding out this hope. Keep hope alive. Hell with hope.
Like you say, they're saying that insanity is doing the same thing while expecting a different result. We keep attempting to appease to the morality of white. So it is inherently, you know, crazy to continue to appease to a people who obviously show that they have no morality in terms of where other races are concerned. Whites only care for whites, and they always seek to maintain their advantage, and they justify it as a means of maintaining their culture.
And see, you know, I ain't got no problem with that. That's them. The problem I have with it is we keep trying to appeal to them to change, and it's had really bad or deleterious, if you want to use that word, effects on us as a people, because we don't understand this. And we keep holding and hoping and praying while we're in their system that they designed, they shaped and fashioned in their image and in their interest, and we keep trying to say, no, it should be. Because, see, I think the problem, Brother Franklin, is the Caucasian is so slick with it. You know, he gives an appearance, the illusion of inclusion, but has no desire for it to be a reality. It is false, you know. And so because of that illusion... But no, hold on. Because of that illusion, we continue to work hard for his illusion to be our reality. That, and I'm going to say this again, and I constantly say this. I rather struggle hard in a world of my own choosing than to be a fool in somebody else's dream. And this is the European's dream. And in his dream, this is a nightmare for us. And we don't understand it.
Brother, you're on point 100%. And you're right. In terms of the illusion of inclusion, we recently seen it during the presidency of Barack Obama. I remember when he got elected in 2008, people praying and crying and sharing. It said, yeah, black people can't complain about racism anymore because we got a black man in the White House. But we
right.
saw this. The image of the black family in this White House. But if you look at many of the policies that happened under the administration of Obama, you saw no change. You saw no betterment of the black society. He rarely spoke up for black people. He most often chastised us. And under his administration, we lost the Voter Protection Bill. And we saw the results of that during this last election, 2018. All of those systems they put in place to impede the black vote. It was under Obama's administration that he stripped the federal protection for our right to vote. You know, so we see that the election of Barack Obama was merely an illusion of inclusion, as the perpetrator the falsehood that white society in America has become more of an equal society. But when you look at the real, you know, the laws, the things that's going to affect, you see they are still about white supremacy, 150%. White supremacy. That's how the society is built. So often, many of us are surface thinkers. We function on what we saw on the surface, and we don't look beneath the surface. Beneath the surface, where we see the truth, and the truth is racism still prevails today. Many black people may not face the type of racism as our ancestors did, but we still face racism every day. It's only now it's deployed more sophisticatedly. We are still victims of white racism, and it's all around us. It's in our legal system. It's in our schools. It's in our media. It's all around us. We are victims of white racism today. They have gotten no better. And the reason why they are so revered as part of real history is contrary, because they create a narrative, they control our movies,
right.
They control everything, and we're being conditioned to admire them. We're being conditioned to admire them. This condition is even exists within our religion. When we're seeing the face of a white Jesus, white angels, everything, we've been socially engineered to adore whiteness in spite of their brutal history to the contrary.
And see,
this is what we must recognize.
And see, it is, in my mind, that's why I wouldn't debate a Caucasian or discuss.
No, I was behind.
Yeah, because I don't want to hear a damn thing they got to say about what they have done, because what they have done has been egregious to humanity, to this planet, you know. So I'm not going to hail them for any concepts that they feel have been developed by them. And it's now, you know, the religion of Christianity, and I throw Islam in there, and I definitely throw Judaism in there, particularly where Judaism is practiced today, because Judaism's face is European. Judaism's face is white. They dominate and control Judaism. These Ashkenazi Jews, these European Jews who are not Jews. In fact, even the word Jew, because there was no letter J until the 16th century. So how could it be Jews, Judea, Jesus, Jerusalem? Mm-hmm. How could it be any of those words if there was no letter J? And how do these disciples get these European names?
Yes.
How did they get all these European names?
Marcus Garvey said that the white man's propaganda has made him master of the world, and all of those who believe his propaganda becomes his slave. This is so true. Society functions based upon narratives, and those narratives become our propaganda. And the white man creates the narrative that exalts him. And I'm going to give you a simple example of how powerful this is, how this shapes our mind, shapes our behaviors. Let us say, for example, right now in our schools, black children are being taught that every time they turn the light bulb on, thank Thomas Edison. When Thomas Edison invited light bulbs, the light. So it's in our psyche that the white man, it was the white man that brought us out of darkness. Therefore, we should feel indebted to him. He have brought us out of darkness. Okay? Now, that narrative about Thomas Edison is an inaccurate narrative, but it serves and benefits white society because it is filled with our psyche, our white superiority. White brought us from the darkness. But that narrative is not a factual one. When Thomas Edison invented his light bulb, no one bought it. No corporation bought it because it wasn't efficient enough. Sometimes it burned for less than an hour. It wasn't until Louis Latimer, an African-American, patented his light bulb. And then there's another narrative that he improved on Thomas Edison's light bulb. That's a damn lie. He was inventing his own light bulb the same time Edison was doing his and long before. Edison merely rushed to pattern his inferior light bulb. It wasn't until Louis Latimer patterned his light bulb that these corporations, these companies around the world started buying his light bulb. They sent him around the world to start installing light bulbs. So it was a black man that took the world out of darkness. But that true narrative is not a narrative that we're functioning upon. There's a saying among those who control populations. It says perception is more important than reality because people function based upon their perceptions rather than reality. So if you can control the perception of the masses, you can control the masses. White society has created a perception of white superiority, and that perception allows them to control the world through false narratives. It was a black man that took us out of darkness. But many of us don't know. We function upon the falsehood that exalts white. And it is this why sometimes you see black people would show more respect to a white person than a black person.
Right.
It is this reason why a black person may sit up higher in a chair when talking to a white person. Now, here's the deal, which actually takes us into the Woody Lynch myth. Many people say, when we see these symptoms among our people, we say, it's Willie Lynch. That's that Willie Lynch syndrome. Willie Lynch never existed. Willie Lynch never existed. Those who believe in Willie Lynch, who believe after 400 years of oppression, if you believe that the mindset of self-hate and adoration towards white is a result of a slave syndrome, then you are ignorant. Not only are you are ignorant of your own ignorance. The reason the behavior that you're seeing among black people is the result of deliberate white social engineering. Right now, there are propaganda designers and social scientists who control the masses and targeted populations. They indoctrinate thoughts in our minds through information they give us. Regardless of how intelligent a person may be, if it's possible to control the input that's being into his mind, it's entirely possible to control what he will think. White society bombards us with white exalting information 24/7. It's in our cartoons. It's in our movies. It's in our TV shows. It's in our education. It's in our religion. And we're constantly bombarded with things exalting white and marginalizing and putting down black people.
That's like what Francis Crest said. It's in everything they do.
Everything.
It's everything. It's in all areas of people activity. All areas, education, entertainment, judiciary, law, war, sex, you name it. It's in everything they do.
Everything that they control. They control information that's fed into our minds, and they give us information that perpetuates white superiority. This is the reason why we have people bleaching their skin, perming their hair, calling themselves niggers. We don't recognize what's being done because we don't understand social science. We don't understand it. We are people who have been stripped of our history, stripped of our culture, and we've been bombarded with black demoralizing lies.
And see, even
demoralization is a tool you use for controlling the masses.
Right.
Even Hitler said, demoralization is the warfare of the future. Whenever oppressors want to control the minds of the oppressed, you constantly inundate them with negative misinformation about themselves. When the oppressors constantly bombarded with misinformation about themselves, they start distrusting each other, hitting each other, disliking each other, and they become more compliant with the oppressor's dominance over their lives. In fact, the information that we continually receive in the media, we are being programmed to believe that it is we who are our own worst enemies, and we therefore need whites to govern over our lives. This is the program we're getting through the media. We must understand how society is created. Our minds are being socially engineered by white society. It is a science that's being used against us. not some slave syndrome of guy who never existed. Until black people recognize the truth of our condition, the truth of our condition, we will not liberate ourselves. In order to liberate ourselves, we must overcome the monopoly, the white oppressor over our minds. They program our children. We see our children go to school every day. Okay, here's what you notice. Whether a black person has a doctorate degree, a master's degree, or whatever, he's still calling himself niggers. When you go to the church, you see Christians call themselves niggers. People, so even religion has to free our minds from it.
No.
We have to recognize the programming of what's being done to us and free ourselves from it.
Everything. It's in everything they do, brother. I'm going to take a break. When we come back from this break, Brother Frank, we're going to continue this conversation. Okay. I'm going to read a little bit from Wikipedia's definition on Willie Lynch, because I know we've talked about this. We need to talk about it more as we continue to go on to help liberate the minds of our people. Brothers
and sisters, when we return, I'm going to show how Willie Lynch, the story of Willie Lynch, actually benefits white supremacy. Willie Lynch benefits white supremacy. I'm going to shut up when we return.
Okay. All right, brothers and sisters, once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Y'all ready?
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That is We Are Winner from the album Seven Principles by Kwame Cobb and Sister Shavinduka out of Chicago. And we truly are a winner. Other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays. Right after my program, I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. But on Mondays at 6 p.m., all times are going to give our Eastern times, at 6 p.m. to 8, Acres of Diamonds. Right after Acres of Diamonds from 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black 365. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. Also from 8 to 10 on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. On Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening, brothers and sisters. That's right, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Rich. On Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. You can give your questions, comments, or concerns, or just give us your African perspective. I'm here today. Of course, today is Wednesday, and on Wednesday, we have my good friend and my brother, Brother Franklin Jones, the Black People Matrix, y'all. Brother Frank, how you doing?
Fantastic. Always fantastic when I'm in your company, my brother.
All right. Fantastic. Well, listen.
I would appreciate what you do.
Oh, yeah. I'm committed and dedicated to trying my best to do whatever I can to help raise the consciousness of our people. I'm trying my best. Just as Drusilla Dungy Houston says, how can a leadership point the way forward that is utterly ignorant of the past? And so we have been fed information that continues to keep us in that ignorant mode that we don't understand and know the past. We've been trained to believe we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created civilization of any kind. And so when people...
What you just said is exactly the point I'm making. You said we've been taught that we were nothing, that we were uneducated, we were running through. But you know, when you say that, what you're actually saying is that we were functioning based upon false white narratives that's been injected into our minds, and we function based upon those narratives. What you just said, that you said it in a simplistic term, but what you're actually saying is an example of what I'm saying is how white society creates narratives, inject them into us, and then we function based upon them. There are millions of Black people in America who are walking around believing that we were, like you said, we were ignorant, we were running around with rags, that we were illiterate. This narrative benefits white society because it makes the Black masses feel indebted to whites for enslaving our ancestors. It literally makes us feel grateful that we were the ones that were, our ancestors were enslaved. It makes us feel that we should be indebted. It makes us feel grateful for our ancestors' enslavement. What you just said is exactly the point I'm making. White society indoctrinates narrative into us that serves their interests, just like the narrative that people believe that most of the slaves were sold. Even though Africans had all the gold, the diamonds, and white and Western money had no value in Africa, there are those who've been indoctrinated with white ideologies to believe that most slaves were still sold away, fairly. Many of us believe that we were given away by Africans who didn't want us. These narratives all benefit the system of the white society. So we have Black people who are walking around with white mindsets. We have been brainwashed to think in ways that serve and benefit the white dominant society. Those are all lies. That's how they maintain their dominance over us, by injecting narratives into our minds that serve their interests. You know, so many of our people want to cling to fairy tales and urban myths and fantasy. People who cling to fantasy in regards to their plight and their liberation and their condition are people who invite their own destruction. We invite our own destruction when we cling to fairy tales and myths instead of wake up and look at the reality of our situation.
And probably the most damaging fairy tale and myth is Christianity. probably yes. the most damaging myth for us as a people, more so than any other theology or religious belief that we yes. may have. And believe me, we got some wild ones out there. We got some wild ones. You know,
it's Timbuktu. In regard to blacks being ignorant, and in the Timbuktu University, they found over 700 books written in different languages of philosophy, everything, mathematics. And the earliest encyclopedia was written in Africa 900 years before they even thought about it in Europe. But we're not functioning based upon this truth. We're functioning based upon the narratives that we were ignorant. You see, those narratives served the slave master. It was a slave master teaching the slave that you came from nothing. We did you a favor. And that's so many of our people are functioning based upon those narratives.
A Negro peon in Florida, she said she's glad her people or our people or the people were enslaved by Caucasians, because otherwise she would be in Africa worshiping a tree. She's also,
I saw that.
You saw that? She's also pushing and promoting Christianity, saying that in the schools, that should be taught. Christianity should be elective in the schools. You know,
Everything you're saying is totally agreeing with what I'm saying also. Because I saw that also, and that video of her has had thousands of shares on Facebook, YouTube, all over. She said, she is literally grateful for slavery because it introduced us to Jesus. Yeah. And you see, my point is, she's functioning based upon false narratives that serves her oppressors. And in accepting those narratives, she has become a better slave to the white society.
That's right.
That's how we have to understand how this works. How they inject their ideology to the black mind. And that makes us think in favor of them. I've heard preachers say the same thing. Mm-hmm. I'm glad my ancestors were enslaved.
Right.
You know, we have to understand that what is called social engineering. When people are oppressed for a long time, their collective aggressions towards the oppressor society will continue to expand until retribution and rebellion by the oppressed becomes inevitable. This is a part of the human condition. Oppressive people eventually strike back against the oppressors. The only way to prevent this from happening is to turn the collective aggression
inward.
Of the oppressive society against themselves.
Against themselves.
And this is achieved by indoctrinating narratives, ideologies into the minds of the oppressed that makes them think in ways that serve and protect the interests of the oppressive society. Within our society, millions of black people now think in ways that serve and protect the interests of white society. Keeping black people demoralized, divided, and self-hating is how the white society protects themselves from a unified black retribution. This is the reality.
And
they're able to do it because they control information that's fed into the black mind.
And giving them a theology that is tied to them and saying to them in that theology, obey those who have subjugated you. Obey them. And as if you would do me, and you will get yours in the by and by. Your life here on earth ain't gonna be about a damn thing, but you will get your rewards when you die, when you go to heaven. Let me take a call. Let me take a call.
Okay.
626. Good afternoon.
Yes, my brother Oshie. I'm brother Frank Jones. Brother Marcus here.
Right on, brother Marcus. How are you today?
I'm doing great, good brothers. You know, you are so correct. And I can tell you, as coming from that island of Jamaica, and how those people use white psychology on us in Jamaica.
Yes.
See? Jamaica has the most churches per square mile anywhere on the planet. The most churches per square mile. Yet, we have so much violence in the country, black violence, you know. So that show you how white psychology plays into the mind of our people. the bleaching cream can't stay on the shelf long enough. Everybody bleaching.
Yeah.
So it is, man, I tell you, you know. And I heard you talking earlier about Martin Luther King. You know, one of Martin Luther King's chief advisor was a man by the name of Stanley Levison.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Jew. Stanley Levison was even in charge of King's finances. You see? And according to Dr. Tony Martin, he said Stanley Levison even completed a book, one of those books that Martin Luther King had written, because, you know, he died, so he couldn't complete the book. So he said the way that the last chapter of that book was written, it had to be somebody like Stanley Levison wrote it, you know? So these Jewish people, they always come and side with us. Oh, we are oppressed together. Oh, let's be, you know, being victimized together. But they are one of our arch enemies because they keep us poor and broke. But they align themselves with us and talk about we are, you know. So we need to cut ties with these people.
No doubt.
And yes, because Oppenheimer, the Beers, those are owned by Jews.
Yes, European Jews who dominate and control Judaism, and of course put a Caucasian face on it. And then because of some retribution or some challenges to them, use that for getting sympathy from us saying, we're in this together. No, we're not. We never have been. Although a lot of Jewish money, even to this day, what's his name, who finances Black Lives Matter. You know, a lot of European Jewish money, but the bottom line is still always about them in control. You know, in fact, the relationship is them as landlord, us as tenant, them as store owner, us as customer. There's always been that kind of relationship.
Yes, I agree, my brother.
Oh, Brother Marcus. Okay, give us a call back, Brother Marcus. What was interesting in the war in Panama? Some months later, I read an article that the European Jews who had stores in Panama were petitioning to the American government for some kind of restitution or reparations because of the war happened in their neighborhood, which is an Panamanian African neighborhood where it never stops, where these Jews had the stores selling to our brothers and sisters in Panama, and where that conflict was happening. You know, and I'm quite sure they got it. Hell, they get billions of dollars to Israel every year, billions of dollars. 646. Good afternoon. Six four six. Good afternoon.
Okay, he lost him.
Okay.
You know, Stephen Biko said, I'm going to paraphrase, and I don't quite remember how it went. Stephen Biko said, the greatest weapons in the hands of the oppressors are the minds of the oppressed. Paraphrasing it. And it is so true.
Hey, OG, do you hear me?
Hey, Jay, I got you. Hold on, Jay. Let Brother Frank make his comment. Well, you know, Frank, I end my program with that quote. I end every program with that quote. The greatest, in fact, I extend it because it is not just, you know, the mind that we're battling for, but also battling for the MINE, the mineral wealth of Africa that is under the feet of African people. But it's the mind. As long as they have the minds of our people, they can control them to do whatever they want us to do.
Yeah. White people control our education. They control our media image. They control our written history. They control it all. And we wonder why there's so many self-hating black people. It's because our oppressors control what we believe about ourselves. And they maintain their dominance by keeping us demoralized and self-hating.
Well, isn't that Willie Lynch?
Yeah, here's the difference. I'm glad you said that. Here's the difference, okay, about Willie Lynch. Okay, when I was trained in psychological warfare at the War College in Fort Benning, Georgia, it teaches how to suppress the people. And that's how Willie Lynch suppresses black people. It teaches, they teach you this in the war college, that to oppress a targeted population, to subdue a targeted population, you must mislead them to believe that it is, that their core problem is an internalized one. You must convince them that their core problem lies within themselves. When a people believe that their core problem lies within themselves, inherently within themselves, this turns their collective aggressions away from their oppressors and turn against themselves. When Black people believe that their core problem is themselves, this directs us against ourselves. We start doubting our ability to come together against our oppressors. We start believing the worst about our people. When we believe that it's inherently wrong with us, we stop focusing on our oppressors and we start focusing and putting down ourselves. So this is why we must recognize that our program, what's wrong with it, is not a Willie Lynch inherited program within us. It is a constant system that's being constantly reapplied upon our minds daily. Because when you oppress it, if Willie Lynch was true, we would see Black self-hatred weakening every generation. We wouldn't see it getting stronger. We would see it weakening. But we're seeing the opposite because this is a current system. I'll give you an example. In the 1960s, Black people were wearing afros and saying, "I'm Black and I'm proud," say it loud, tell her my brother and my sister. Today, Black people are now calling themselves niggas and bitches and wearing perm hair, blonde weave, the blue contact lens. So we're seeing the condition of self-hatred increase, not decrease. This is why it cannot, the past slave syndrome cannot be the cause of the problem, because we would see the system weakening with generations, not getting stronger. We see, what we're seeing is a system being constantly applied upon our minds through mass manipulation, through media programming. Those who control the media image of a people control their culture, and our culture is being negatively steered by white society. That's why it's not really alleged. It's mass manipulation. That's how they maintain their white dominance.
You know, I saw on, in fact, one of good brother, one of my good friends, Brother Taki Ratan, peace be with him, he had met the brother who wrote the Willie Lynch letter. In fact,
that's Corvina Ashanti. He said he wrote it in 1979.
Right. And we were going to have him on the program, and I lost that contact when Brother Taki passed. Because I wanted the person who wrote it. In fact, I seen a YouTube piece where he's being interviewed in a bookstore on the East Coast.
Yeah, I have that. Yeah, I've seen that. Well, you had him on last night.
Say what,
that
Jay?
That was Willie Lynch. That was Willie Lynch last night, basically, in the fresh with the nonsense and the BS. That he was talking, you see, he could never answer the question that I asked him. I mean, the reality is, there's a lot of sick Negroes running around here, infiltrating the community, pushing forward an agenda that has nothing to do with sovereignty or liberation, but more to do with integrating into, as Martin Luther King said, the burning house.
Yeah,
but nobody wants to point them out, and everybody wants to entertain them. Like I said last night, if you talk about morality and the behavior of morality, Kamala Harris cannot run for the president, because the first place and the first way that she was introduced to the public was on her back. But see, nobody wants to deal with that. Secondly, she's not even an indigenous African-American. What is her roots? Her roots are Indian and supposedly Jamaican. I mean, but nobody's going to call her out.
But see,
because
also,
she's saying that she's Black. Show me and prove me where the hell she's American Black.
Well, regardless of her and many of the other women who are throwing their hats in that ring for the 2020 presidency, many of them will be dropping off, her definitely included. But when you talked about, morality, then obviously this country, which I always believe is amoral, they don't give a damn about morality.
No question.
They're hypocritical to the nth degree.
They preach to you morality.
Right.
But they the most immoral bastards on the planet.
Right, because they're hypocrites.
So, that's the contradiction.
Exactly.
And it's always like Franklin just said, the smokescreen, the game that's played on you, the manipulation. The sad thing is we as a people never see the manipulation in the manner in which we being played. Because, like I said, I'm no supporter of Trump, but I have to ask you this question, and you have to be honest and answer it. What policies have he set forward or passed that hurt black people? I can't think of any right now. What legislation that he has passed, like other presidents have, that have hurt black people? What has he done, if we're going to be honest about it, to hurt black people?
What has he done to help them? Now,
the question becomes, and this is where we have to be critical thinkers. His position is to elevate white people. So now, if your position is to elevate white people, and you're not doing anything directly to hurt black people, then that's par for the course. The question then becomes, if he's elevating white people and hurting black people, then we have more of a problem. But what he's doing is status quo for America. Gotta be clear on that. And I don't think we're clear on that.
Oh, I'm very clear on it. It's like being in a tied game right now. I'm very clear on
it. You gotta hope that they don't score a run.
I'm very clear on the purpose of why Trump was elected and what Trump is doing. I mean, when you say what has he done specifically, but there's no doubt about it, and nobody could argue the fact, because of his election, Caucasians have become emboldened in their feelings of hatred towards others, hatred towards Muslims.
But it's also hatred, a wake-up call, OG.
It's
also a wake-up call for us as a people to see what the dominant culture is and what our relationship is to the dominant culture and to move us forward. See, in all of this right now, OC, we are in a position that we have to start thinking, number one, outside of a box, and finding ways to protect our position on the planet. See, everybody wants to place us in a situation of integrating into something that is deadly harmful for us. Now is our opportunity to move forward and to see ourselves and, in a sense, separate ourselves for those that want sovereignty and those that want to be embedded into a burning house. See, you gotta study this thing. You gotta understand this thing. Donald Trump is nothing more than a symbolic figure of white supremacy hitting us in the face when we don't even want to deal with it. We don't want to accept white supremacy, most of us, and we don't want to address it, attack it, and do the necessary things to be able to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump is the best boogeyman black people have ever had at this present time.
Well, you know, Jay, there have been, and Brother Franklin, you, and also too, yes. I see that Brother Marcus joined us again, but, and of course to all our listeners, and if you want to call, please give us a call at 215-490-9832. But my point here is that there have been times in this country where they know that, I think they, let me see it, how am I going to say this, that somehow there's an inkling they know that what they have done is wrong. And so therefore they put forth some kind of moral point. And then, of course, once they have done that, they take it back. Just like going through the years that when FDR had his change in terms of how we were being treated, and then he came up with the law that helped us to some degree, and then Eisenhower rescinded them, and then comes Kennedy. He does the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, and then, of course, here comes Nixon, and they're rescinded. Then later, affirmative action happens and so forth, and then here comes Reagan, and then they're all rescinded. And then, of course, I mean, it's a constant ebb and flow like that, because there is no feeling by Caucasians that there is going to be or ever will be any true equality, any true acceptance of African people in their system. But we don't understand that. Go ahead, Frank.
Allow me to interject. It's because although all white governments profess equality for all their citizens, they are all secretly unrelentingly committed to the preservation of their nation's white dominance. In fact, if they didn't do things to maintain their white dominance, they would then be diametrically opposed in their own self-interest. This is why white governments always put up systems that impede black advancement. They may do something, create illusion of creating black gains, but they'll always create power systems because they want to maintain their white dominance. Now, I love what Brother Jay's, I always appreciate what Brother Jay's critical thinking, because I like what he said about what has been done, what has Trump done against black people. I like his critical thinking. But however, I would like to say this. When he started his racism and when he kept directing his racism toward Mexicans, and we saw his support for the skinheads, the racist group, I know if there wasn't so much magnifying point on his racism, eventually he would have developed and implemented systems that would have worked against the interests of black people. I think because there's been so much attention and so much backlash against his racism, that forced him or prevented him from creating other systems that would have eventually adversely affected black people. I think if no one had called him out on his racism, if there was no backlash against his racism towards Mexicans, then we could see down the road him implementing systems against us, because the man is clearly a racist. And I believe the reason he has to implement systems against us is because he's been called a racist on such a large scale. Now, there's something else I'd like to say. Earlier when Jay was speaking, I think Jay may have inadvertently offended some of our listeners, perhaps even Brother Marcus. When he said that the congressman, that she was not black, that she's also Jamaican. And I think we must remember that the Africans, the black people in the Caribbean, the Bahamas, Jamaica, Trinidad, Virgin Islands, they are Africans who were brought to the Americas in the Caribbean islands as slaves. Many of them were also slaves on sugarcane plantations in the island. They are African genetics. They are the same brothers and sisters of African Americans. Now, when those Jamaicans, those Bahamians, those Haitians who are Africans come to America and they have children here, their children are still African Americans, because those black people in the Caribbean are African Caribbeans. They have the same DNA. They are African. And the slave ship merely dropped them off to different islands. We must not divide ourselves from the Africans in the Caribbean, who are also Africans. We must remember that. And I meet many people who also try to hide their blackness by saying, "Oh, I'm not black. My parents are from Jamaica. I'm not black. My parents are from, you know." I see that.
Well, let me get Marcus in. Go ahead, Marcus.
Yes, my brother. Thank you for that clarification, brother Frank. It's correct, you see. And what they do actually in the Caribbean, they tell us, see, when you come to America, do not associate with those.
Yeah, they do.
Because they're lazy. They don't want to work, you see?
Yeah.
But look, the black man in America, he said, "Why the hell should I work some more for? I ain't get that. I worked for 250 years. I ain't get nothing." Just say, "Why the hell?" But that's the game they play, because when I was coming to America, we went to the U.S. Embassy, and it was a Negro peon there that told us that. It wasn't even a white man. It was a Negro peon told us, "Do not mix with the black people here." So we come with that mentality here.
My Nigerian friend told the same thing. Stay with African Americans.
Go ahead, Jay.
No. My point is that she's claiming to be American black. She's not American black. Her parents is coming from, or one of her parents came from India and the other one came from Jamaica. There is a difference than one that has an American black father that was born here in America. That's what I'm saying. She's playing games when it comes down to race. You understand? So this is why I'm saying I know that there are African descendants all over this hemisphere. I understand clearly that we were shipped off to different races and that we are African. But what I'm saying is she's trying to make it seem like she's American. But I'm wondering, where was she born at? Was she born in America? Because what everybody's saying is she was raised in Canada.
In order for her to run for president, she would have to be born here.
Okay,
her parents don't have to be born here.
I guess she was born here in America, and I guess when her parents separated, she then moved to Canada. Because I know what I've read in regards to her is she's was raised in Canada. But I mean, when you talk about these relationships as far as who we are culturally, you got to look at the whole picture. What has been her relationship with black people? How has she treated black people? And I don't think it's been very good.
It hasn't been good.
Brother Jake, I am an African who was born in the Caribbean and raised in America.
Yep.
And that's who I am. So I am connected to my African-American brothers. I'm connected to my African brothers in the Caribbean. And I'm connected to my African brothers in Great Britain and African brothers on the continent. And I've always saw myself as an African born in the Caribbean and raised in America. And I've
Stop right there. Let me. This is proving my point. When you identify yourself, listen to what you just said. African, Caribbean, American, not African, American, Caribbean. See, you put it in the order for what your origin is.
Let me clarify. You think I said to you that I'm an African, Caribbean, American? I didn't say that. I say I am an African who was born in the Caribbean and raised in America. I see myself as an African. The reason why I see myself as an African is because my ancestors were enslaved and stolen from Africa and spread throughout the land, okay, around the world.
Hold on, Jay.
My ancestors were enslaved and taken in bondage, I hold on to my African heritage. And because my parents, my great-grandparents were dropped off in the Caribbean, as slaves on sugarcane plantation, but not by their own will, I still acknowledge my African. So I'm an African first and most. And the conditions that took me away from Africa are all secondary. And that's how I live my life, always.
I'm gonna get somebody else in this conversation. 627, go ahead. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Oshie. I'm just calling to, you know, I'm glad Brother Marcus came on with what he came on with, that the people coming to this country really have a negative outlook on African Americans because that's what they're told to do when they get here. Now, let me just tell you about my business experience this morning. I was with a brother that I was conducting business with from Guinea. And as we can, he said, man, you're quite mannerly and you're such a professional. He said, are you from this country? Are you from Jamaica? And I said, no, I was born here. He said, no. Well, was your father born here? He had such a negative outlook on us. I mean, and I said, no, my father was born here. His father was born here. We were born in America. And he said, just the way you conduct yourself and your mannerisms, I thought you were not from this country. And I didn't know if to be insulted by that or whatever, but we got to talk about Guinea. We got to talk about how it's located near Senegal and the customs. And I told him I'm going to Ghana maybe this summer to conduct more business. So, I just wanted to add to this conversation. that, you know, I'm a person, I cannot point the finger at anybody. I want, this is what I want for us. And it's not that I demonize anybody or anything like that. I said we have to first recognize there is a problem with us before we have to solve it. Yes, we are under an oppressive system. Yes, we have nothing but evil in that White House. Yes, people are brainwashed by the so-called, what is the Jewish-owned media? Yes, all those things occur. But we have to come to face with these things are a fact and something is wrong with us first if we want to go on ahead and move forward. And that's all. That's the only position that I've ever taken. That's a position I'll always keep. The person has to have responsibility for themselves. If I go around blaming this, blaming that, blaming this, blaming that, I'm going to be stuck just like one of my daughters is right now that I'm trying to wake up and get her act together. Blaming everybody. I want to marry you. You know, and that's just where I'm at. That's just where I'm at, brother.
All right, thanks, Ralph.
Thanks for your comment, brother. You know, I've heard this comment quite a bit. I've heard it over and over. And I know that there are people who come to this country with negative views of African-Americans. That people from around the world, they come here thinking that African-Americans are lazy, African-Americans are this. They are unaware of the many positive, great narratives of African-Americans. Now, I understand that brothers say there's something wrong with us and we need to just face what's wrong with us and so on. But in reality, the collective state that Black people believe about themselves comes from white people. No Black person is able to actually say there's something wrong with us without relying on data information from white people. Our interaction, our negative interaction with our own people is not enough for us to quantify or justify a negative slate of all Black people, okay? The reason why Black African-Americans are so negatively perceived around the world is the result of anti-African-American propaganda that's been spread around the world. You have to understand the system is bigger than what you think. During the 1960s, African-Americans received much global support that eroded the American image. Dr. King was even awarded a Nobel Peace Prize. Many people spoke on behalf of African-Americans. So the Americans' white social engineering scientists realized that to continue their mistreatment of African-Americans, which is necessary for maintaining white dominance, they had to create an image of African-Americans that justifies their mistreatment of African-Americans. It is a tactic called manufactured consent to mistreat. So therefore, they create an image of African-Americans that is designed to create a shifting of victimization in favor of whites and against Blacks. This is a system that they use to erode the image of African-Americans around the world. This create and facilitate a system that allows the white society mistreatment of African-Americans to continue. Unless you study and learn about the Tavistock Institute of Human Behavior, unless you study of how the system works, you cannot sit here and just say, we need to get our shit together, because you don't understand. I am not standing here on a pedestal ignoring our problems. I am not standing here saying there's nothing wrong with us. I'm saying
that. Okay, I just want to ask you this one question.
Hold on, Frank. Frank.
Hold on. Do you think we're fine where we're at?
Say that again,
think
Ralph.
We're completely fine where we're at. That's the question I got to ask you.
Too many of our people are functioning from ignorance. We are functioning from narratives we don't understand. We don't understand the system that we're in, so we're speaking from our emotions. We're speaking from our frustration. You have to understand the system. The Black image is being vilified, marginalized, and denigrated for several reasons. It maintains white dominance because it creates a societal setting that allows the white side to restrict the Black people, cops to continue routinely kill Black people. The negative image of Black people also divides Black people. When we are divided, we are easier to subjugate. We must recognize that our image, our statistics, our societal narratives are controlled entirely by white people. White people who benefit and maintain their position of dominance by degrading the Black image. You have to understand the system.
Okay, brother, all I'm asking you, so you're saying we are fine where we're at?
I didn't say that we're fine, but what I'm saying to you,
that's all I'm saying.
As long as
there's room for improvement.
Oh, a lot of improvement, Brother Ralph. There's a lot of need for improvement. All
right. I'll go back on mute, man. I'll listen to this.
Okay.
On mute.
If anyone knows, I never said we are fine. What I said is we are unable to get an accurate reading of our collective state when it is entirely controlled by white oppressors who maintain their dominance over us by denigrating our image and keeping us divided. That's what I'm saying. As long as whites, our enemies, are controlling our statistics, our societal narrative, they will always distort them to serve their interests. It is called the preservation of white dominance.
And see,
they didn't. Go ahead.
And see, the reality of getting out of this madness, this mess, is our responsibility. And the only way that we can do that is acquiring the knowledge of self and the confidence in who and what we are. We cannot rely on any other system that is outside of us. We could definitely not rely on any system, and that's our problem. We keep thinking the educational system that this place has can help us, the religious system, the economic system. None of these systems that are designed and controlled by Europeans, by Caucasians, will help us. They will only enslave us.
Yes, to overcome this system, we have to understand how it truly works. And we must stop responding from our emotion. We must stop responding from our frustration. We must study the system. And once you learn how the system works, you will realize that you can't judge your perceptions. Your perceptions are created by white social engineering science. Your perception of your people is created by your enemies. You must understand that we know nothing of ourselves that didn't come from whites.
And see,
we understand the system in order to overcome system. And I am not, in no way am I trying to justify negative behavior among our people. I worked in the criminal justice system. I worked in the federal law enforcement system. I am not justifying criminal behavior. I am showing you, we have to understand how we are being socially engineered. We have to understand it. For example, when you look at a black guy walk with his pants hanging off his ass, it frustrates you. But study and understand how is it possible? Why is he dressed that way? How is he been socially engineered to think that way? We have to understand things. Let me take you back to fourth grade. When I was in the fourth grade, there was a girl in my class at Cross-Eyed. Everyone in the class would pick at her because her eyes were crossed. I left and I started studying about Cross-Eyed. I learned that her eyes are crossed because she has a dominant muscle in the back of the eye that is pulling towards one way. And through surgery, she can correct it. So we went back to school, and I told the other students that what's wrong with her eyes is there's a dominant muscle that's pulling the eye in one direction. Once I explained to the other children what was why her eyes were crossed, they stopped teasing her because the knowledge they understood, there was nothing funny about it. So many of our people go through life functioning based upon surface thinking, and you have to show them, you have to peel back the cover to show them what's really going on. Black people's negative perception of themselves have been indoctrinated into their minds by white society. We know nothing of ourselves that we're not getting from white society. Our negative interaction among black people merely confirms the greater programming that's been indoctrinated to our minds by white society. I'm not guessing this. I know this. I researched it. I studied for over 30 years. They trained me this. White men trained me this in class of psychological warfare.
Brother Jay.
Well, I mean, what you're saying is correct, but we've been here long enough to be able to start making our own decisions and moving forward in the direction that we need to, and the hell with those who don't want to go along. I mean, at some point in time, as they say, you got to give up the drugs.
But the reason why
man is the drugs. You gotta give up the drug and go cold turkey.
Brother Jay, the reason why some of our people goes from the cradle to the grave ignorance is because the mind is like a computer. No matter how intelligent you are, you rely, your way of thinking relies based upon the information that's being input into your mind. So if you're constantly being downloaded for the wrong information, you're always gonna have wrong solutions, wrong results. Many of our people have never heard of social engineering. Many of our people don't know that there are people who control about crowd control, mass manipulation. Most people don't understand how our minds are being controlled by white society. Most people don't realize why it's important for white society to educate us, why they continue to give us free education, because it serves their interests. Many of us don't understand. So our people are stuck on ignorance.
And it's not just black people. It's not something connected to our inherent racial, because there are white people who are just as programmed. When you look at how the Republicans program the poor whites to support them, the masses are ignorant.
But knowing that the masses are ignorant, and knowing that you really can't save them, then the question becomes, what is one supposed to do? Is one supposed to continue with, let me finish the question, is one supposed to continuously try to save them, or is one just supposed to, you know, just cast them aside and go about the business at hand? How much longer are we going to try and save people who do not want to be saved, or who do not understand that they are part of a sickness? At some point in time, we have to cut them off.
You have a great question. Allow me to respectfully answer you. You're absolutely right. I am not about trying to save people who don't listen. I speak for those who are listening, those who are receptive to the information. I don't care those who want to fight me. I'm just spreading the information. When I was trained in psychological warfare and propaganda, they teach this. They say the only way to fight propaganda is with counter-propaganda. We must create true information and spread true information. And we must constantly spread it, regardless of the fact that there are those who are against us, those who would fight us. We must ignore that, because that creates internalized frustration within us. So we must learn the truth and spread the truth as counter-propaganda. And we must continue to spread it, and not to bother ourselves with those who are against us, not to bother ourselves with those who would attack us. Just continue to learn the truth and continue to spread it. And those who are receptive to the truth will hear it and embrace it. Those who are not will ignore it. Help with those who would ignore it.
And that's what
learn
this,
the truth and keep spreading it.
And that's what this program is about. This is propaganda. If you want to say that, because I'm constantly throwing
propaganda against the white man's propaganda.
Exactly.
That's the only way to fight it.
And that's what I do. I challenge it. In fact, let me just say this. If you notice, I don't use the words that the Caucasian has put into us to use those words. I don't use slavery. I don't use slaves. I don't use white. I don't use none of those words, black. I tried, because I understand that words, and people always say this, that words have meaning. That when somebody, and I used to do a thing when I used to work with kids, I used to say, now close your eyes. I'm going to give you some words and you tell me whose face you put on it. I would say, to close your eyes, and I would say, welfare, drug addict, drug dealer, no fit father, no fit mother. And of course, and I say, now be honest, whose face did you put on those words? And of course, there, our faces on black those people. Words, because we have been conditioned and trained. That's what I keep saying to us. This is what we need to do under 400 years of captivity here, is change the wording, change the dialect, change,
I understand, brother, you're 100% right. You know, I understand the frustration I'm hearing on the phone. I understand. When you love your people, you become frustrated. When you love your people and you see the condition, you see the ignorance, it's frustrating. But I learned a long time ago that if I was going to be a part of this war, I couldn't get frustrated. I must not allow those frustrations within me. So what I do is I start studying how to create counter propaganda, because those white people who make bigger propaganda, there are thousands of them sitting in offices, and they're well-funded, and they spread that negative propaganda. They keep spreading it. Like that's how the Willie Lynch was used. They took the Willie Lynch, and they use it to their benefit to share propaganda against us. It's even the reason why they spread the word niggers against us. There are thousands of language and dialects that are in Africa that mean king. Thousands. But the only one that's being spread among us is the word nigger. The only one among those thousands. This is not a co-listening. This is because of those who create propaganda spread the word niggas. Because when you spread niggas against us, when we words have power, and when we continue calling ourselves niggers, the word nigger, although the spelling is different, the subconscious mind doesn't see a different spelling. The word niggas keeps us acting and thinking as niggers. The N-I-G-G-E-R-S. So the white man spreads niggas among us, and to keep us in our mind instead of niggers. When we start understanding psychological warfare, when we start understanding social engineering, when we start understanding propaganda, we must learn to develop and create our true counter-propaganda and just spread it. And if you run into someone who want to fight you, curse at you, ignore him, walk past him. I don't waste my time with people who want to fight me. I don't waste my time. I just keep spreading the truth. I keep spreading the truth that I study, I research for years, and I teach, and I spread, and I spread. I don't allow myself to get frustrated because I focus more on those who I wake up rather than those who want to fight me, those who want to attack. And you know what's so funny? There are black people who want to attack me because their minds are so programmed to think about black people in ways that a white man is programming the thing that they think that when I speak against the white man, I'm ignoring our shortcomings.
They've
been programmed to think that.
Let me get Jay in here. Jay, we only have a couple of minutes.
Well, listen, we just have to move forward in this direction, continue the dialogue, educate ourselves, and just identify ourselves as being African.
That's
and
right.
Moving forward and not allow these imposters to come into our midst and cause nothing but confusion and chaos. Because anytime you allow people like the Bookers and the Harrises and the others to come in, that's where we find ourselves in trouble.
All right.
Have a beautiful rest of the day and look forward to the show on Friday, Brother OC. And let's remember, watch out for Negroes that was on the show last night. Them are some very dangerous characters, and they're coming out of the woodwork because they got to push on us, people like Harris and Booker, who
all right.
are enemies. Hotep.
All right, Hotep.
One love, my brother, the Hotep.
Brother Marcus, go ahead.
You know, the main reason they don't want the black man here and the black man in outside of America to connect is that the black man here in America is the most racially conscious black man on the planet.
That's right.
Because of
Thank
the
you,
treatment that they have been making out to this black man here. He know who the white man is. You see, when the white man come to Jamaica and the other part, he don't put the show on that he put on here.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So that makes the black man here racially conscious of who he is. He's a black man. He knows it. But they don't want us from the Caribbean to link up with you. But, hey, it's too late.
I hear you. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, brother. Listen, this Friday's program, you're going to want to listen to this Friday's program. My guest will be Brother Ben Njai, the Black Panther, a great researcher of our history. We're going to have some great dialogue. I hope that you will join us. Brother Ben Njai, the Black Panther, the brother from the Amun Ra Squad, with great knowledge and information. He's been doing a lot of good research. So you're going to want to listen to Friday's program. A lot of good information will be given. And, of course, you can give your perspective. Brother Frank Jones, I appreciate you.
And thanks for having me. I appreciate you also, my brother.
All right. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, please join us this Friday when we have our guest, Brother Ben Njai, the Black Panther. Brothers and sisters, Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodie. Abibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, Abibi Fahodie. Peace, family.